Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Let's hear it for the keeper of our zoo, guest producer, Paul Mission Control Deckant.
Mm-hmm. He's a very benevolent zookeeper. Mm-hmm. He gives us treats,
all
and
kinds,
pets, mm-hmm. and knows where to scritch right behind the ear.
He lets us play with our phones too, which a lot of primates can't do.
Oh my god! Well, what a hilarious thing to discover! That I believe it is the Toronto Zoo.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's true.
That was has a mandate not allowing visitors to show the primates funny videos on their phones.
Yes, yes.
It was causing them to experience some kind of disconnection from their mates.
They fell for the TikTok trends.
Apparently.
It made them act and process things differently. I'm Ben, you're Noel. This is an exciting two-part series, at least two-part. Like you said earlier, dude, this may be something where we revisit with a part three. But for now, we're talking about animals on trial, man.
Yeah, animals on trial. We started off with a laundry list of some kind of messed up historical examples of animals right. being put on trial, maybe for the a little bit more self-serving for religious institutions.
This swine shall be put to death, and its human owner shall be made to create a dowry. Mm-hmm. Such that the illest child may be married.
Perhaps, in the hopes thereof, yeah. But yeah, now we've, in the back half of the first episode, we moved much more towards modern day of animal activist groups starting to kind of beat the drum of treating animals more like people, or at least giving them certain rights. And, you know, we had some discussions of some laws that have passed in certain places in the country and in the world, requiring, more humane treatment of animals before they are ultimately slaughtered, which I've always found kind of funny. I mean, I guess it's not. I mean, of course, you don't want them to be tortured and suffer. Obviously, meat eating is a thing that's not going anywhere. Can you imagine any of this ever going to the extent of, like, it's illegal to kill animals?
Possibly. But if for that to happen, Noel, humanity would be in a pretty dire situation already, right? Like, biodiversity is decreasing at a profoundly disturbing rate. We know that in the Anthropocene, which is this current era, the age of man, we know that
Earth is experiencing probably its sixth mass extinction. If you were listening now, then there were far more animals alive when you were born than there are as you're hearing this episode. It's a bad situation. And also, you know, I'm really glad you bring up this idea about eating meat. As you know, because Noel and I do hang out off air with each other. We are actually friends. As you know, dude, I was vegetarian and vegan for a number of years. And I came back to becoming an omnivore when I was living in a place where I did not have the privilege to control a diet that way. And sometimes, you know, we do have to remember, of course, for any vegans, vegetarians in the crowd, there are sustainable, non-cartoonish ways to practice veganism and vegetarianism. But for a lot of people in the world, for billions of people, that is simply not an opportunity within their scope of experience. So we have to be like careful not to look down on people for their dietary choices.
Sure. And just being, you know, devil's advocate here, just for a split second, aren't there some people that go so far as to make the argument that vegetables have feelings too? I mean, they are living beings.
Right.
You know, they require nutrients. They require certain conditions to allow them to quote unquote live. And are we not committing vegetable genocide when we plow the fields? You know, I mean, it's a slippery slope.
Plants do communicate with each other. There's another Stuff They Don't Want You to Know episode about that. There's some excellent research going on there. And slippery slope is absolutely correct, in my opinion. It's if given that humans don't have a definition of intelligence, nor sentience, nor sapience, where does it stop? You know what I mean? Like, what is okay to eat? And for any, what are they called? Breatharians in the crowd? Remember that scam where there was like that one guy who was like, oh, you know, follow me and you'll learn to subsist off just sun and air.
Yeah.
Didn't work out, by the way. Spoiler.
Wouldn't think so. I mean, you could probably, you know, you can get some vitamins, you know, that way, but not enough to subsist on and to survive. But yeah, I mean, we've heard about some of these activists that have tried to give animals protection under laws, not just using more modern laws surrounding animal welfare, but things specifically that would be applied more to humans, right? Ben, for example, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, which can be a very divisive group, if well-meaning, whether it be through some of the extreme imagery of their campaigns or, you know, some of the initiatives that they go after, which we're going to hear about some of them that maybe would say are pushing the boundaries of sanity.
Yeah. And in PETA's defense, of course, it's a huge, huge organization. Right. So it will not always be internally uniform. There is going to be dissent at any time. So I love you're setting this up. All right. PETA, once upon a time, sued a photographer named David Slater. David Slater had been taking some nature photos of wild macaques. And one day, these creatures, they're very, very clever monkeys, they used his camera to take selfies. And Slater said, this is amazing. And he's right, by the way. It is a cool series of photos. And he published them.
Presumably PETA, after getting the ape to swipe for him on Tinder, right?
Yeah, just so. And so PETA sues David Slater in federal court, and they say, look, this photographer infringed upon the copyright of the monkeys. The judge kicked this suit out of court quick, fast, and in a hurry, and said, I am not the person to weigh in on this. Yeah. This is an issue for Congress and the president.
You're not going to get me to step in this one.
Right, no. Exactly. No. Joe Biden, stop. Cancel everything on the president's schedule. We need to talk about the monkeys' selfies.
Well, no, I get it, though, right? Because it is just a big old ball of worms. I mixed some real metaphors there, but a barrel of macaques is what this is, because there is, you're 100% right, Ben. It would unleash just an unbridled slew of cases. You know, I mean, there would just be, it would be no stopping it. So you got to really be careful with this kind of thing. I do think it's funny too, because doesn't copyright originate like on the device sometimes too? So like even if someone takes a picture using your camera and it's on your device, can you really prove that? Well, I guess you can prove it if it's a selfie. Never mind. Don't listen to me. But it is interesting here. And it does seem like one of these sort of symbolic lawsuits that PETA is so fond of.
No, everybody listen to Noel. If you are in court for copyright now, you need to stand up. You need to quote us from Ridiculous History.
That's right.
And say from that show, Ridiculous History. And no matter what anyone says, even if they agree with you, be sure to shout, "You're out of order. This whole court's out of order."
To which the judge will reply, "I am not the person to weigh in on this. This is an issue for Congress and the president. Take it right to the president's desk."
I love it. I love it. So the judge, I mean, jokes aside, the judge is probably erring on the right side of caution here, because you will set a precedent. And that's what all these cases are about, setting precedent. So I think you're right. The judge said, "I'm not touching this one." Other cases around the world went further. In 2013, India's environmental ministry said that cetaceans are, quote, and we mentioned this in that legal personhood episode on Stuff They Want You to Know, the government of India said dolphins, whales, etc. et al. Are, quote, non-human persons with, quote, their own specific rights. And that means you cannot keep them SeaWorld style for entertainment.
Yeah, and a huge shout out to the Economist again for some of these bits. Really, really fantastic article there. That highly recommend you read the entire thing. Gradually, nervously, courts are granting rights to animals. Cetaceans, Ben, we talked in the last episode about how pissed off dolphins and whales are at us, you know?
Sure.
I forget, I think it's called The Cove. There's a documentary about like the slaughter of dolphins in Japan. And it's apparent, I haven't seen it because it just seemed like such a bummer, but I've read about it and I'm aware. Dolphins are the victim of some significant brutal slaughtering using like lances, you know.
Absolutely.
It's a whole thing. And obviously whaling is, I believe, illegal now, but it's more because they're endangered, I think, than the fact that they're like sentient. I don't think it's a humanitarian, you know, on the part of the I think it's more like they're protected species, right?
Yeah. The issue is that the majority of the human world is against whaling, but you can still see whaling in practice, particularly in Norway and Japan. In some cases, it's advertised as like a tradition. Japan did something really sketchy for a number of years where they said they were culling whales for research purposes. Mm. Yeah, they were researching them into a plate. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's very similar with The Cove and dolphins. I believe that takes place in Japan as well.
Not surprised.
So the fact, and again, we also know that these creatures communicate, you know, using sonar, you know, and you communicate through great distances underwater, and that they are incredibly intelligent. If you've seen the latest Avatar movie, James Cameron clearly has an axe to grind in this argument. There's a whole, you know, save the whales kind of vibe to that movie.
Way of the Water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was really great. I really enjoyed it. I was not expecting to give two hoots about Avatar 2, but I very much enjoy it. That James Cameron really knows what he's doing. And the Avatar world at Disney is remarkable.
So also quote that in court. Quote, Avatar 2, Way of Water.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was a an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I owned a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details. The year after India says no more cetaceans kept for entertainment purposes, their Supreme Court says has another ruling that's profoundly fascinating. They say, look, all animals have an inherent right to life under the Constitution of India, but they can still be property. So, like, you can still own chickens, but they do deserve to live. And this case specifically revolved around a practice called, forgive our pronunciation here, folks, Jallikattu, in which men would take possession of a young bull, a male cow, and they would tame it through torture. They would tame it by mutilating it. And the court said, look, every species has a right to life and security. In our view, life means something more than mere survival or instrumental value for human beings. I love that. That is such a mic drop moment. You know,
totally.
We could, at least.
We could take that advice with the way we interpret the Constitution. You know, the idea that when we have the right to the life, liberty, and of course, the pursuit of happiness
or
something. But like life, you know, in other countries means a hell of a lot more than it does here in the United States. You know, we do not have the right to life in that we get like health care provided for us. You know, there are many that absolutely don't have the right to life, you know, under that interpretation of the Constitution. So this is pretty progressive and pretty wild. It does make me think too, Ben, about, like, I mean, a lot of these issues too of animal cruelty that are sort of like supported by tradition, you know, and in history, right. Like bullfighting, you know, which is obviously pretty horrific, but it's, there's such a history of it, you know, it's such a legacy behind it, like whole families that, that every generation is like, you know, a matador or whatever. So it's like, what are your thoughts on things like that and how these conversations apply to ultimately quite brutal practices that are, you know, abusive of animals, but are really, really popular?
Like foie gras, like veal as gourmands. That's exactly right. That's a negotiation to make. Yeah, it's a good question, man, because ultimately, hopefully without sounding too cynical, I would posit that it's the money that moves. So for something that is a great economic benefit, you know, like bullfighting, it's not surprising that there would be a lot of perhaps disingenuous arguments about legacy and tradition and on and on and on. Those all feel like they're just kind of code words for saying, look, we make a lot of money off this and we need to continue profiting from it. Those practices are going to stick around in some form or another. You know what I mean? It wasn't too long ago in human history where a great form of entertainment was to have a tied up, captured bear fight dogs. And yeah, people would bet on it.
Or a dude armed with a pointy stick fight a lion, you know, in a pit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, again, our very definition of humanity and personhood, you know, has changed over time. Like in the time of ancient Rome and in Greece and all that, a slave, not the same as the slave trade that we would have here in the United States, would not have been considered a person. Or a criminal is no longer considered a person. And to a degree, you know, it gets complicated here when we think about the prison system and like what rights actually, you know, you're stripped of rights when you do a thing. And oftentimes we know based on, we've had recent conversations with some of the folks from Lava for Good about the problems within the prison, the justice system, quote unquote, and how when someone is stripped of their rights because of a crime, even like their right to vote, isn't that removing a certain amount of their personhood, you know?
Right, exactly. This is, again, even with humans, the idea of personhood is something that humans wrestle with, right? So while it may sound overly ambitious to start thinking of other non-human creatures as deserving of rights, it is absolutely a path that would be overall a net gain for the world, like for biodiversity, for the environment, probably for the economy at some point. The biggest legal challenge that has arrived so far, as we're recording this in 2023, the biggest legal challenges come from attempts to give animals something called habeas corpus rights. Habeas corpus is the idea that you have the body. We always hear this in legal dramas, you know. Essentially, it means in the human world, if you are under arrest, then you have the right to be brought before a judge or into court, and they have to prove that there is a lawful legal reason to keep you locked up. Because they have you locked up, they have the body, now they have to prove that there's a reason they have that. So think about this applied to zoos, right? If you are like Susia, a chimpanzee in a Brazilian zoo in 2005, then animal rights activists are going to fight on your behalf. This poor chimp was found dead in her cage before the court could rule in this habeas corpus case. And then it happens in all these other places. It happened in Europe as well.
I have to imagine, man, that in the Brazilian case, due to the, you know, the animal obviously dying, that there was concern that the conditions were not good. And that's 100%. Why they pursued this. Yeah. Because, I mean, again, we know that there are certain zoo situations that are not bad, that where the zookeepers really are, you know, treating the animal with respect and giving them a lot of attention. And they have maybe not the same amount of room as they would in the wild, but they have a good bit of room and a good facsimile of their kind of natural habitat. And a lot of them, if they were out in the wild, they wouldn't make it. Sorry, I don't mean to keep sounding like a zoo apologist. I just really appreciate that mission. Yeah, exactly. I appreciate that mission, you know, when it's done correctly. And
I appreciate
obviously
it.
In cases like this, where it's treated more like a circus attraction. attraction, you know, or it's okay. I mean, probably some circuses are fine too, but it's all about how the animals are treated. And in this case, obviously, it led to the untimely death of this creature. In 2007, activists in Austria applied to make a member of their group the legal guardian of a chimpanzee by the name of Heisel, which had been released from a pharmaceutical lab. And in this case, the European Court of Human Rights rejected this application.
Boo. They're, you know what? They're biased. You can tell in the name, European Court of Human Rights. Get out of here. You're out of your depth.
Well, unfortunately, that's the thing, though. The other one doesn't exist. And what, you know, I was talking to a friend of the show, Frank.
Frank!
Mulheron yesterday about how legal conversation and, like, you know, discussing things that are, like, legal codes or whatever, like, you know, laws that are on the books. It's interesting because it kind of takes the whole idea of, like, opinion out of things in a lot of ways, because we all know that laws are imperfect, but that's not the point. We're not here to debate whether the laws are right or wrong. We're here to work within the framework of what exists. So you have to figure out how to navigate all of this animal stuff within a body that literally has the name human in the title. And that's how this all started, was right. Like, you know, how do we navigate these human laws and apply them to animals and figure out a loophole to get it? It's imperfect, all of it, you know, but it is what you have to do.
And there is some good news. As of late, animal rights lawyers have started to win some cases in court. In 2014, Argentina's Criminal Appeals Court found that Sandra, an orangutan in the Buenos Aires Zoo, did count as a non-human person. And this was an animal cruelty case. But this was also a huge, huge win for animal rights. And as longtime listeners may know, I've been going through an orangutan rabbit hole obsession of late. So I am pro orangutan, man.
They're cool creatures, no question.
So cool.
You know what else are cool is chimpanzees. They'll also rip your head off if you're mean to them. And so don't be mean to them. But Cecilia, a chimpanzee in a zoo in Argentina, was declared a non-human person who had been deprived of her freedom by being placed in the zoo. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And was ordered to be taken to a sanctuary in Brazil. You know, because, I mean, the difference between a zoo and a sanctuary is like a piece of land that is
a more natural environment.
That is a natural environment that is predetermined. And, you know, I mean, there obviously are boundaries, right? Like, otherwise they would just escape and go into Gen Pop or whatever. So, but it's not the same as being held in a cage at a zoo.
Yeah. And then in 2017 in Colombia, we see the Supreme Court of that country ruling that Chucho, a bear with spectacles is counted as a non-human person. And they say, look, we're taking him out of this zoo and we're putting him in a wildlife reserve. He can keep his glasses.
Man, I love the idea of a bear with spectacles. I think it's a breed.
You're right. Okay. You're right.
I'm sorry. That's why we can't have nice things.
I just, you know, no, the truth is important. And
I'm picturing the bear with glasses bouncing, dancing on a ball spinning plates. You know,
I picture him like Hank McCoy, like the Beast in the Marvel Universe. Yeah. I picture him in court going like, you know, do I not wear spectacles?
Yes. You prick me. Do I not bleed?
Exactly.
Is my fur not blue? But outside of South America, we haven't really seen a lot of these arguments carry much water.
Yeah, that's right. It's unclear right now how to triage or prioritize.
Divvy all of this stuff up, right?
Yeah. Like, which species deserve the respect that you are supposed to give human beings? You know, the short list is always the super duper intelligent creatures, but should we sentence other life forms to a brutal, horrifying existence and then death just because they're dumb? If we start torturing and killing living things just because they're dumb, a lot of humans are going to have a bad day.
Oh, no doubt. And it's also the whole argument that we see about animal testing, right? Mm. You know, obviously, there are certain types of animal testing that are inherently cruel, like we've talked about with the cosmetic testing and certain pharmaceutical testing. But it can't be overlooked that certain apes, you know, and lab rats and such, you know, certain creatures that are routinely used to study medications that can save human lives. So at that point, it's sort of a balancing act. You know, you're sort of doing the whole weighing thing, like is which one is the greater, you know, species, you know, which one deserves, you know, like is no one's making the argument of doing, you know, human testing, even though we certainly have in the past been. If you want to find out more about that, read the Stuff They Don't Want You to Know book. There's a whole chapter on human experimentation. There's very much a thing, you know, that is not that far removed from the present time. But thankfully, at least, you know, mainstream, we've gotten past that.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, the law is a patchwork. And that is the opinion of the preeminent experts on this field of study. We're talking about people like Kristen Stilt, who teaches animal law at Harvard Law School. Animals still lack rights, says Stilt, but the line separating animals from people is getting increasingly eroded by these rulings in India, Argentina, Colombia. And there are people who fire back at this, who say that personhood might be a nice idea, but it's not going to work. And they're not trying to be jerks when they say this. They're entering, again, into some philosophical moral quandaries, right?
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac, Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one, and that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino, and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it so. The Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire. With the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
For instance, there's this idea that bestowing legal personhood on an animal is at heart, it's meant to protect them from the actions of humans. It's meant to protect them from things like factory farming. It's to protect them from lab research.
I've been looking for an opportunity to bring this up. I think I missed it when it first came up. But remember the story of Tusco, the elephant that was used in LSD research? The University of Oklahoma was injected with 300 milligrams of LSD, which is about 3,000 times what would be considered a human recreational dose. And he died pretty quickly. It's not clear as to whether the LSD caused him to die or whether it was
didn't help
the stuff that they used to revive him. But yeah, it's to protect them from stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we see these stories pop up. They go viral in the media, right? Look at this animal doing a crazy human-like thing. This pig got drunk and then tried to fight a bigger animal, or this bear did cocaine, or look at this orangutan. They're dressing up like a person, you mm-hmm. know? And these things, these stories, the reason they connect with people is entirely because humans feel this fundamental connection, this fundamental commonality with all living things. And if you look at the legal system that humans have created, if you want to force humans to treat animals as legal persons and remedy that inadequacy of animal protection, then what you're going to find is that it is kind of a reaction to the systematic failure of traditional animal welfare laws. They don't really protect animals in any meaningful way. That's the argument.
100%. I mean, again, that's we know this to be true just from the farming, the factory farming stuff alone, you know. Despite the best efforts of, you know, activists, we know there are still pretty gnarly conditions, you know, in certain very large scaled kind of factory farms.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, there are conferences about this all the time. No one at these conferences is a villain, okay? Just so you know, there's no like Kraven the Hunter character showing up in stingray boots with like a tiger fur stole just noshing on some whale meat snacks, yeah, and going, no Cruella
DeVille-esque figures.
Yeah, no one's going, animals are the worst and it's fun to hurt them. They're saying things like, how do we make the world a better place? Which is a beautiful question. It's a very difficult question to answer. And the idea that humans should be the arbiters of these decisions is already kind of inherently off base, right? It's already sort of biased. You'll say, we are not animals. We can save them, though, and we can treat them almost like they're as cool as us. And that's kind of weird, right? If we flip the idea and we assume that the animals become the arbiters, then we're left with a really puzzling thing. Like, imagine animals denying they are people by denying that humans are animals. It just ties my brain in a knot. You know what I mean?
It's wild. There's no question about it. I mean, you know, it goes to show in all of these examples that we've brought up and how the legal system kind of has to be sort of navigated, you know, in order to even have any change take place in the treatment of animals.
100%, you know, and the push to create animal personhood within the bounds of the law can only go so far, you know, like we've been saying for this whole week. The animal personhood idea usually applies to the very the very, very smart creatures, as humans understand intelligence, sort of the honor students of their biome. But we can't sentence other animals to torture just because we don't think they're super smart. And we probably need to look a little bit closer at the idea of domestication, right? At the idea of animals that remain wild. Does a snow leopard, for instance, which is not a domesticated animal, does it have the same right to life and dignity and the pursuit of happiness as a cetacean or a human? And then what about, you know, what about the pigs? What about the cows? What about the goats? What about the sheep? Making this personhood move for all living animals, the current human economy just is not capable of doing that, right?
Yeah. And it comes back to what I asked earlier, the idea of like, is there a world where one day it's like, you know, killing an animal is made illegal? And I would argue that it would take so much to get to anything resembling that. And I don't think anyone's even calling for that because, again, like, we know that animals kill each other every day, and that like there is, like, you know, to not be too Lion King about it, sort of a circle of life, and that humans happen to have evolved out of like a hunter gatherer society, like through technology, but we still like eating meats, you know. Ooh. So the question is, because we don't need them exactly, we could all survive on like Impossible Burgers and lab grown stuff, right? And maybe that there's an argument to be made if not only because of the implications on the environment, you know, from cattle farming, you know, and like the water that it takes to feed cattle, you know, and like, you know, things like that, and resources. So we could make the argument that we don't need to eat animals, and that is a luxury. Mm-hmm. And therefore, because it's inhumane, perhaps, and it contributes to problems with the environment, that we should stop entirely. But we like our stuff. We like our comforts here, you know, in the United States. And so short of some massive sea change or like shift in the old Overton window, I just don't see that ever happening.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough because you're nailing all the right things, man. Like, it is completely possible for people to exist as a vegetarian species, right? Largely. And it makes me think that the real question is, how do we constrict humanity enough to allow other species to coexist? That's the real problem, right? Like, that's where the rubber hits the road. And the idea of legal personhood of animals, is that going to change the way that poachers work in different parts of the world, right? Is that going to stop the ivory trade? Is that going to stop processing of bear bile or creation of, shark's fin soup, that kind of stuff? Shark's fin.
Right.
Bird's nest, shark fin. Those are the two bad soups. Right.
Yeah, they're the bad ones. I think we could maybe come relatively close to closing this one out. There's a really great statement from Saskia Stuckey from the Universal of Basel, referring, you know, taking place in a paper presented at Yale University called Personhood Beyond the Human. And I think there's a couple of really good pulls from this. And I'll read this one if you want to read the next one. To push to create an animal personhood within the law only goes so far. It happily includes primates, domestic and companion animals, elephants, dolphins, and the like, but it would enhance the legal status only of those animals that stand within the light of the human campfire, animals on whom it's easy to project human qualities, like, ding, 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 intelligence, animals that have an obvious economic utility or that readily appear to be capable of suffering cruelty. It stops well short, to put it mildly, of insisting on something far more fundamental, that all species have an equal and equivalent right to their own existence. And Ben, I think this next one really nails it home, if you want to.
Of course, yeah. It continues. Even to call this a right is to fall into a familiar legalistic and linguistic trap. We don't have a word. much less a concept in law to suggest that the existence of any species is its own sufficient justification, a justification that applies to every species, including us, whose justification is in no way superior to that of other species. In the Western tradition, God was the guarantor of the equivalence of all species. God was also, of course, the grantor to humans of dominion over all species. So you can see even some of the world's quote-unquote smartest people end up chasing their own tails in figuring out how best to address this problem.
Yeah, and this paper really just ends with a question, which I think is where we end today. The important question is, how do we restrain humanity enough to allow the continuing coexistence of other species? I wish we had an answer. And after two parts of this, I think I have maybe more questions than answers, because this is a real noodle scratcher, Ben. It really, it causes you to think so much about what it means to be human. And if that is even that special, like,
I don't know. Humans are okay.
No, you know what I mean? I just mean to the point of this paper, like what makes us so great? You know what I mean? Like just because we have opposable thumbs and can think about thinking, like you can't know anybody else's experience or the experience, let alone the experience of an animal, you know? So it's like, it seems very short-sighted and human-centric in the same way that it seems short-sighted to think that any extraterrestrial encounter would be some species or creature or type of thing that would resemble us, that we could even communicate with or relate to in any way, you know?
But let's take it one step beyond the... one step beyond the... wait, is that the show where it's just Riker starting with all these weird questions?
I don't know. Maybe so. All the Star Trek guys got a science show.
We kind of wrote a couple. I got to send the compilation to you, man, or maybe we can watch it together, because it's just amazing. Anyway, this makes me think of the scary thing. A little step past the streetlight, off the edge of the map, here be serpent stuff. Extraterrestrials are statistically inevitable given the size of the universe. And how likely is it that those creatures or entities are having conversations like this about humans? We might just be the insects. You know what I mean?
What?
They're like, don't.
That's the sound of my brain exploding.
I mean, it's a weird one, and
it's a sci-fi trope, because it's absolutely reasonable to think that there's some greater intelligence than us that's looking down at us, and that we think we're so hot shit and that we're at the top of the food chain or whatever. I mean, a great example is the movie Arrival, you know, where it's like we're like insects, you know, to a sufficient enough, you know, higher power or whatever, we would be to them what we think insects are to us, you know?
Yeah.
And again, we're not trying to be nihilistic here in this on like some sort of existentially dreadful down note, but that is kind of where these, you'd think it was a silly, oh, animals in court, but it really does start to really make you think about what it means to be alive, you know? And for that, I say kudos to Dr. Z.
What a time. Yes, thank you to Dr. Z. Thank you, of course, to our pal Max Freight Train Williams. Big, big thanks. Special thanks. Even like Max had a sound cue. Thanks to our guest producer, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Paul Mission Control Deckant.
Not to mention Alex Williams, who composed our theme. Jonathan Strickland, man, that was cool. I mean, that's a strong word. It was...
Non-fictional.
It was informative and non-fictional to have him back. And man, I really pooped the bed on that one with the whole coffee thing.
Come on.
What? At least we're setting the giant grandfather clock back to midnight, threat level midnight, or at the very least zero, so we can start afresh. So you won the battle, Quister, but not the war.
Interesting fact. He is a pescatarian.
Okay, that's the one that only eats the shrimps, right?
He cannot eat shellfish.
Oh, that's right.
Well, crazy allergy.
What does that leave him?
Fish and fowl, he says.
Fish and fowl.
So like salmon, he'll spatchcock a chicken. You know what I mean?
I thought chicken didn't qualify as PESCA? I thought PESCA was specifically
PESCA is just for, yeah, it's, I can't remember the specific word for both, like, no pigs, no cattle, no sheep. It's just birds and birds and fish that are not shellfish.
Got it.
Look, we could ask him. He will break it down for us, dude. We could just ask him the next time we have like 30 minutes at the end of an episode.
100%. It looks like it's called the Politarian diet.
Politarian?
Politarians, fancy. Sometimes eat fish and seafood, are considered PESCA politarians.
PESCA politarian. Today I learned.
Hey,
I feel fancy. Like a spectacled bear.
I feel pretty. Oh, so pretty and witty and bright. And that's all thanks to you, Ben. And you, Ridiculous Historians.
That's thanks to you, Noel. And I'm glad we're an audio podcast because I lost a bit of my composure and I literally just smelt my armpit front of us. I should probably clean myself up.
It's good. Honesty is the best policy. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo! Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five!
High Five!
Casino!
Casino!
Win at HighFiveCasino.com!
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.